football on off the ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar Davids, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene here on Off The Ball. I'm Ben Symes. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by two usual co-hosts, co-presenters, co-contributors. Matthew Brennan on my right. Matthew, how you doing?
Good, Ben. How are you?
David Wilson on my left. David, how you doing?
Oh, good. Good to see you back.
Yeah, I've missed the last couple of weeks.
Been a while. Hamstring.
I've a little hamstring tear.
Yeah.
Little tear, yeah. Two different reasons, actually, both weeks, and both completely outside of my own fault. I was actually meant to be here last week, and then car broke down
on the way. Car down a hamstring.
It's
dodgy cars.
Which was... Mm. Yeah, it is. It's not a dodgy car. There's actually nothing wrong with it at all. Thanks very much.
Well, it broke down, so I don't see something wrong with it.
If you're looking for a Volkswagen Polo, it's fixed up and it's back in action and it's ready to go. Absolutely nothing wrong with it, if you're interested. So we're recording this on Wednesday, the 10th of June at 1 p.m. It's very important to stress the time that we're recording this in regards to the Ireland versus Israel game at the end of this year. So as we are recording this, there is no official press release from the FAI. We have had a press release saying that there will be a statement after the Ireland versus France game, which of course was last night, where they unfortunately lost 1-0, but they are going to the playoffs at the end of the year to try and qualify for the World Cup in Brazil. So there is a board meeting from the FAI, as we can gather. There's a board meeting from the FAI tomorrow, Thursday, and there may be a statement following that on the game. It is widely expected that the game is going to be moved. The home game is going to be moved outside of Dublin, outside of Ireland, to a neutral venue. There is precedent for this. Only one country have done it before. Belgium moved the home game against Israel in 2024 to Debrecen in Hungary. Israel, of course, have played their own home games at neutral venues in Budapest, in Debrecen, in a couple other venues in Hungary, and in, is it Belarus or Moldova was the other country as well? They've played a couple of home games in. But anyways, only one side have moved their home game out of their own country against Israel. That was Belgium, and it looks like Ireland are to be doing the same. So this is the game on the 4th of October. That's going to be moved. The game on the 27th of September is the away game. That's also, of course, likely to be in a neutral venue. The FAI board met last week. They met again on Monday, and it is believed that Monday is where they decided that this game would be moved. They informed government ministers that they wouldn't make the announcement until after the Ireland versus France game on Tuesday night, and I think there was a little bit of unrest allegedly within the government that it wasn't put out straight away when the decision was made. We of course had the Sinn Féin Stop the Game protest kind of rear its head this week as well. We had Joanna Byrne in the studio last night. You'll hear a little bit from that throughout the course of the next while. The Stop the Game motion, which is being backed by politicians and footballers, Centurion James McLean, former Ireland manager Brian Kerr, Shamrock Rovers captain Pico Lopez is of course in America at the moment, out of his game against Spain on Monday. We'll talk a little bit about the World Cup throughout this episode as well. But firstly, lads, it looks like this game is going to be moved out of Ireland. Are you happy with the decision? Are you annoyed by the decision? Do you have any feelings at all or thoughts on this?
This has been put in the FAI because of a lack of leadership by so many different facets, I'd say, within the game and within kind of political context as well, like a lack of leadership from UEFA for not expelling Israel for breaking its own rules, a lack of leadership from the FAI to, you know, especially we've seen what, you know, when the draw was made, the kind of left Tamar Hall-Grimson to answer all the questions. And then really most kind of gallingly, the lack of leadership from the government, especially the two ministers, one minister for sport, Patrick O'Donovan, saying, you know, that the game should go ahead, but he won't be in attendance. So, you know, a boycott for me and not the kind of a thing. So I feel a little bit for the FAI because it's just a situation that they're in. And I feel more for the players and the staff that have to be faced with this. You know, we spoke about this last week. We spoke about it a couple of times over the last few weeks. No one should be left with this decision to play a game of football against Israel. and moving the game outside of Dublin, I think, is the only thing that they can do to get the game played. But it's still, you know, it still doesn't sit right. Like, it's not, that's not the right decision to be taken. You know, over 60% of, you know, the League of Ireland footballers were surveyed and said that the game shouldn't go ahead. Over 70% of Ireland football fans, the real football fans in the country, said the game shouldn't go ahead. So moving it out of Dublin to wherever it may be is not really making a decision. You're just kind of hoping that, you know, that this kind of quells a bit of unrest within the country itself. But I can't see that happening. It's only going to maybe increase over the next few months. But I don't know where I sit with the position of moving the game myself, but it's not a great decision and it's a really terrible situation for everybody involved.
What you've done here, obviously, with moving the game, is you've removed people's right to protest against it. There's almost two sides where you're looking at going, you know, without putting political beliefs on the line, you're looking at it going, you don't want the Israeli flag hoisted here. You don't want to hear the national anthem here. You don't want to see the players represented on the pitch here. But by moving that out of here, you're removing and the game's still going ahead.
Yeah,
you're removing people's right to protest against that regime.
Yeah, that's actually the exact point I was going to make, and that there is really two sides to this, when there shouldn't really be any kind of ambiguity about what should happen. And I'm not going to repeat what you've just said there, but like, it shouldn't get to the point where a decision like this has to be made as far as the game not going ahead or going ahead. That should be taken out of the hands of the FAI, of course. That goes on the government, that goes on UEFA, that goes on FIFA. We went through all that sort of stuff last week, and all that point still stands. You are taking away the right to protest by moving it out of the country. Well, the direct right to protest, of course, if you wanted to go to Hungary or wherever the game may end up being and protest, that kind of is within your rights. How that goes for you, I don't know. But it definitely kind of lessens the ability to go and do that for the majority that might want to go and do it. But then, as Richie Sadler pointed out and painted a great picture that night when he pointed around the stadium and said, that's going to be there, he's going to be there, she's going to be there, XYZ player is going to be here, there, fans are going to be over here. You do get rid of that stuff, and that sort of is the thing that when it's put into a picture for you and you can go, oh God, that's maybe not what the majority of the people want to see. It becomes a weighing up of which is the priority here. What do we not want? What do we want? And that's maybe where the majority of people have been very clear on what they want to happen here, as far as do we play the game, do we not play the game, where there might be a bit of a division even within those people who have been very clear, is whether you would rather have the game played in Ireland behind closed doors or being played somewhere else, maybe behind closed doors as well, but just the fact it's not in the country, you won't have the flag there and all that sort of stuff. There's also the football inside of it too, which you kind of do have to factor in, of course, that we are giving up a home game. And if the game is played in Hungary, we're essentially giving Israel two home games. So we're going to have to play two away games, for want of a better way of putting it, to keep it simply. I don't know how I feel about that, but at the same time, if the game was going to be played behind closed doors here, is it much of a home game? It's probably not. No. It's still at home, theoretically, but the main advantage you get from playing a home game is the fact that your fans are there cheering you on, and you're not going to have that if the game is behind closed doors or if the game is away, regardless where it is. So I don't know, I've gone on for a while there. It's just one of them. When you get to the point where no one is going to be happy with whatever happens, sorry, not no one is going to be happy, but not everyone is going to be happy, because the majority of people want the game not to go ahead. If it's gotten to the point now where it seems as though everything is going to be done to make sure the game does go ahead in the safest possible way in their view, you're going to have people who are actually trying to be together on making the right decision kind of turning on each other, which is what's going to happen here, and that's far from ideal.
Before we move on to the players, I might just stick with this theme of it actually being moved and the consequences of moving something out of the country. We know that the European Championships in 2028 are going to be held here. We saw the FAI bid today to host the Women's Champions League final in 2029. Like, could this put a seed of doubt in UEFA's mind that Ireland aren't fit to host teams or countries if they are drawn here in a competition? Like, say, if a team from, say, Israel or another nation that Ireland had disagreements with reached the Women's Champions League final in 2029, or if Israel or another nation were drawn into our group, in Euro 2028 and they were drawn to play games here, like, is this potentially putting the framework in place where UEFA can just go, well, there's precedent for this now. You couldn't hold this game before under our rules. We can't give you this one now either.
Can I jump in with a very short answer to that before you probably go into a bit more detail? Yes. Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Whether that's right or wrong, yes. That will 100%, that seeded out will be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like UEFA, there was around August, September last year, there seemed to be this push about possibly expelling Israel from UEFA competition. And that looked like that was building momentum. And we had like there was a stop killing children slogan at the UEFA Super Cup final. And that seemed to be coming from Alexander Shefren, who's obviously the head of UEFA. And then that all got quelled due to like US pressure and the fact that they were quite close to agreeing a peace deal now, I would say in inverted commas, between in the Middle East, let's say. And they obviously got done somewhat, even though there's still atrocities happening every day, and there's obviously more incursions into Lebanon, and there's Iranian missiles being flown towards Israel as well. So there seems to be a bit of a feeling in UEFA that might have happened. Now that seems to completely be rolled back on. The international pressure came on UEFA, and now that's very far, you know, removed from where we are now.
And do you hold any gripes at UEFA for that? Because I'm thinking there, like, Alexander Shefren is a lawyer. Like, he comes from a lawyer background. He knows the difference inherently between what's right and wrong. He's a lawyer. Like, should UEFA be held to account more for pulling back from that position when they look like they're putting it up?
100%, I think so. But, like, who holds UEFA to account? It's the EXCO committee. It's, you know, the elected representatives of the 54 European nations throughout Europe, obviously, who are meant to hold these people to power. It's obviously the journalists and different things as well. And I think everybody has collectively let down people in this situation, the people in Gaza and the West Bank particularly. Whereas regards hosting games in Ireland, I think that the threat of removal of games in the Euros is something that we all, as football fans, were like, oh, we wouldn't want that to happen. But I think the majority of the Irish football fans would be okay if that did happen and we did boycott these games.
I'm sorry, I'm not asking about if you boycott it. I'm asking about if you fulfill the fixture but say, we can't hold this game in Dublin.
Mm.
Does it put something on your apron and say, you could play the game, but you couldn't play it in your own venue? Yeah. So then there's precedent there for UEFA to turn around in Euro 28 and go, oh, well, you can play the game. It's just going to take place in London, or it's going to take place in Glasgow, or it's going to take place in Wales.
Yeah. Well, like, we hosted Israel here in the under 21 Euro playoffs a couple of years ago.
That's fine, but that's not now.
Yeah, I know that, but
that becomes irrelevant if we can't fulfill this fixture here. Mm, we choose not to. I say can't. We choose not to do it.
And I suppose it is a choice.
Yeah,
it's a choice to move it. You can choose to play it. You can choose to not play it. You can choose to move it. Yeah.
And the problem again, it comes back to the point where we shouldn't be in a position where we have to make a choice. I say the FAI have to make a choice. But, and I said this last week, is that like the FAI is the Football Association of Ireland, right? And very quickly you can caveat that and say UEFA has the word football in its name, FIFA has the word football in its name. But FIFA have chosen to get political with stuff as far as Trump and all that sort of thing goes. UEFA have chosen to banish Russia from stuff, and that was a UEFA decision. They revised it and they decided to stay with it. They've opted not to do that with Israel, so they have set a precedent where they have to, like, you know, the responsibility is on them now because they've opted to do that. The government as well, the same. If they feel as though there is reason not to partake in this game, then they should make that active. But I think back to your original question, I think 100% if we don't go ahead with this game, it's absolutely going to raise questions as to whether they see us as a suitable place to host games for the Euros. And whether that matters or not is a totally separate issue, but it's the fact that that is something that will happen. It just is. Whether to take action on it, I don't know.
What would happen if Israel were drawn to play Spain? Like, I think it would be a similar thing. There's a similar like sentiment in Spain. Spain are going to host the World Cup in 2030.
Yeah.
Like, what? Do Israel just get their games played in Portugal or in Morocco?
Maybe so. Maybe they do.
Like,
right?
Look,
maybe
look
they
at Iran and the US right now. Like, the Iranians are going to go and train in Mexico, and then they're going to play the games in the US, and they're not even. It looks like they're not even going to stay in US soil. They're going to fly immediately back to Mexico.
Yeah, but that's fine. Right, that's all well good, and that's true. But that's not something that UEFA are going to have to contend with, because Spain haven't been drawn to play against Israel. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, but we haven't been drawn to play against Israel, as in, like, in
we
the future.
Been.
Yeah, but in the future, as in, like, if there was a European championship.
There's no precedent set that Spain have said, we're not going to play this game against Israel. We're not going to host this country in our back garden.
No.
Spain haven't done that, so there's not an issue there, really, until it happens.
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking about similar.
Seen,
I know. I'm not sorry. I'm not
no, nowhere is our country with similar kind of viewpoint on this that Israel have come up against. And Norway played the game at home. Didn't allow away fans in, and the profits were donated to
Mezzanine Frontier.
Exactly, which obviously helps kids in Gaza and people in Gaza. So, like, unfortunately take away, if you were to look at this solely from a football perspective and take away the humanity of it, which is not something you ever want to do, but obviously there are people who are going to look at it like this, and people in suits who are going to look at it like this, they will say Norway fulfilled this game, Ireland didn't fulfill this game, where they were. And look, we're speaking in hypotheticals. Ireland may not draw Israel in. Israel may not qualify for the European Championships in 2028. But if they do, is the precedent set here now where UEFA can turn around? I think it might be.
Mm. The only thing is that the wheels have been set in motion, you know, for these games, for the European Championships to happen here, obviously, in the last. And to move them would be another big pain for them. I think a lot of people as well, especially even probably within the FEI and supporters as well of just football in general, would have seen the clips from the Albania Israel game last week, and like, obviously there was Israeli players on the pitch and people, Albanian fans throwing like shoes at them and stuff, and then there was a whole pile of hostility, and then Israel scored a goal late on, and I'm not sure who the player was, but
Oscar Gluck.
Yeah. So he's obviously played here before, and he's kind of shushing the crowd and different things. Like, it's just a really toxic, awful situation to have to deal with here. Is that, did that maybe play in the minds as well of some people in the FAI to, like, let's get the game out of Dublin? I don't know. It's a unique situation that, yeah, it should be, again, just taken off the hands of the players, the coaching staff, of us in the media, of whoever else, that the game, you know, Israel should have been banned for breaking UEFA regulations and rules a couple of years ago.
Your brain kind of thinks, just quickly before I move on, like, if that's the retaliation you're giving to the crowd there in a country where, yes, over 50% of the population is made up by Muslims, but imagine if a goal is scored in the Aviva Stadium against a whole country who wants you out of the country and out of the place where I can't even imagine what the backlash would be. Before we move on, we're just going to hear quickly from Joanna Byrne. Before we hear this, I just want to remind you, in case there's any kind of confusion around this, what Hamer Grimson said to me last week, that, or 2 weeks ago, that he doesn't see why Russia are banned and Israel aren't banned. I think there's a bit of confusion around what exactly people are looking for Israel to be banned for, and the two UEFA statutes that they break are settlement clubs remain incorporated into Israeli leagues in violation of FIFA territorial rules. So there's about 5 or 6 Israeli clubs that are on Palestinian land that are regulated by the IFA and the Israel Football Association, not the IFA, in the north of Ireland, and compete in the Israeli Football League. And the other one is that the IFA, the Israeli Football Association, has failed to demonstrate an effective and forced anti-racism policy consistent with UEFA requirements. So here is Joanna Byrne, who was on Off the Ball last night ahead of putting the Stop the Game motion to the Dáil.
As I say, the crux of the issue here isn't where the match is played. The crux of the issue is who's participating in the match and who are expected to play.
It does feel as if there are enough opportunities and enough get out of jail free cards going here for this game to happen in Hungary. Like, for the government to wash their hands of this enough, and the FAI to defer to the government, and the government to defer to the FAI. How can you be convinced that this game won't actually just happen in Hungary?
I'm not convinced at this moment in time. As I said to you at the onset of this conversation, I think yesterday's developments and rumblings of this match being moved, in some sense, there's a positive that you can take from that. There's recognition that there's discontent amongst the Irish public. There's recognition that there's massive discontent amongst the Irish footballing community, as we've spoke about already. The FAI's own stakeholders and their own members have voted massively in favour of Israel being suspended from international competitions. They're moving very quickly. They've got the numbers to bring an extraordinary general meeting in the coming weeks, and that will be to take a vote for them not to fulfil this fixture. So, you know, I'm not at this stage. It's probably still very early doors. I'm not privy to the FAI's discussions, but I certainly think there's recognition now at this stage that there's massive discomfort with this match proceeding in any way, shape or form. It could have been a test in the waters to see, you know, how would it go if we opted to move it to a neutral venue. It could have been a test in the waters to see how this evening's motions and tomorrow's motions go, and what government's response may have been to them. There could be a multitude of factors going in there. Only the FAI can answer that. But sincerely, from my point of view, and certainly from Sinn Féin's point of view, we don't want this match to proceed at all. It's not about it being played in Hungary, in Timbuktu, in Dublin or anywhere. We don't want these matches to go ahead at all, and we don't believe they should.
So that was John O'Byrne speaking on Off the Ball to Owen. Last night, that motion was put to the government yesterday in front of the Dáil, and it was opposed by the government for the games not to take place at all. So it looks like if this game is to be boycotted, it's going to fall on the players. And as we heard from Seamus Coleman last week, he said it's a very difficult position to be in, and he doesn't believe it should have led to that. Jamie McGrath told us that he would have to go away and consult his family whether it was right to play this game or not. And they're just the players who have been put in front of us to speak out. We haven't heard from others as well.
It's the most unsurprising thing ever, isn't it? That it's gotten to this point where, you know, you decide. If you don't want to play the game, you don't like Israel, you don't turn up. And that's just always the way this was going to go.
Just a lack of backbone and leadership from the powers that be, that it's, you know, each hierarchy is all just kind of dropped down the whole way down, and now it's on the players and coaching staff. Like, you know, like Simon Harris, Micheál Martin, UEFA, FIFA should be ashamed of themselves, because it's ridiculous and an absolute disgrace.
We obviously saw this before with the Irish basketball team when they were drawn to play Israel. And as you said, the powers that be said that that game would be boycotted. Five players boycotted that game anonymously. And it looks like, you know, a year or 2 years move on from that situation, it's going to have to be how it is again. Players are going to have to boycott it.
Yeah, there was anonymously or anonymously. Government were fairly outspoken when, you know, we decided not to enter the Eurovision.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that now, though. This is clearly a much smaller thing that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
I say sarcastically.
This debate is going to rumble on for many months and many, many, many more months until the game and potentially after the game as well. So we'll have plenty more time to talk about that along the way. In the meantime, we did have the small matter of a game for the Irish men's senior team. We had two games for the Irish women's senior team. We'll touch on that briefly first, because the Koi Geek podcast is out this morning if you want all in-depth reaction to both games. So I was there in Parkacquive on a Friday night.
Weather looked unbelievable.
A pretty special night, not so special for my health with the weather. I'm getting battered in the rain along the banks of the Lee, but like, what a night. It was like, it felt like that playoff against Scotland again, and not just because it was Amber Barrett. It just had that like feeling of a country getting behind it, and you felt that swell kind of come into the game on Tuesday. And I was getting texts off people who, you know, wouldn't really have any interest in watching Carlow Ward side, and they were like, had done up all the homework, knew all the facts about everything, and you were like, this is brilliant, this is exactly what that team deserved. Because I think up until maybe the Netherlands game, their qualification campaign had gone under the radar. Like, no team had ever been promoted to League A and won two games. Mm-hmm. They did that with the back-to-back win over Poland. To finish on 9 points as a promoted team, they finished in the top 10 teams in UEFA, which is a really confusing qualification playoff campaign. It means they don't have to enter the Intercontinental Playoff at the end of it. They will have two rounds of playoffs, one against a League C team, and then the second would be against either a top League B team or one of the relegated League A teams. So you could face Poland again, you could face Scotland, could face Wales, who obviously we've bad memories of with the revenge. European Championships. But revenge could be on the cards there. But a really brilliant campaign from Carlow Ward's side across League A. As I said, if you want full reaction to that, you can listen to the Koi Geek podcast wherever you get your podcasts in your feed. Now, the same night as Parkacquive, we had a pretty pretty miserable fixture, wasn't it? Playing not in the sense of the result, but in the sense of going into a game against a side that are heading to the World Cup and we're in their homelands just waiting for it. Ireland versus Canada, Friday night, 1-1 draw. This was scheduled to be a half 12 kickoff. Yeah. It ended up not kicking off till 1:45, which there was like NBA rules.
Do you know the worst thing about that is I sat up and watched this. That's the first actually time I've realised that it started late.
I was just sitting there like, what's going on here? I had got back to my hotel in Cork City and we texted a couple of journalists. The weather was miserable. I said, you know what, we're all just going to stay in our hotels and watch this. We're not going out for this one. And sitting around waiting for 12:30, getting a bit sleepy. And it was about 12:20. I said, just very late cutting over here for any sort of coverage at all. And then I checked my phone. It was NBA timings, like where it doesn't actually kick off until 10 minutes after. Are we gonna is this an unwritten thing we're gonna
imagine
face the World Cup
at the actual, and I'm waiting up until 5:00 in the morning to watch Austria and whoever they're
Australia playing 5:00 in the morning. It's Turkey.
There's an Austria Jordan at 5:00.
I saw one at 5:00 because I was thinking, tipping in for the breakfast shift, 5:00 in the morning, they might catch the second half. Hopefully they're not doing that, because that'd be a right mess.
On that game, obviously we saw a League of Ireland debutant in from the off. Dawson Devoy lasted 45 minutes. We also saw Jaden Nume get his first start for the Republic of Ireland. I mean, before we get into individual player performance, let's not beat around the bush. Like that first half was a pretty torrid watch.
Yeah, it was pretty abysmal the first half. I do have a bit of sympathy for the players and coach and staff, and him and Grimson spoke about it after the game, where he's like, "Oh, maybe we have to look at how we prepared the players, and they're a bit maybe lethargic, let's say, in the first half." But like, you know, Canada are on something extremely, you know, something unique for them, that they are about to host games in a World Cup for the first time ever. So they're all absolutely at full pelt, whereas our players have played a long season, especially the players that are playing in the UK and further afield. So I do have a bit of sympathy for the team. The structure of the team was what we normally do, but we couldn't keep the ball. And their wingers caused all sorts of problems for our wing backs. I wouldn't be too disappointed. Like, we managed to not actually concede from open play, and we conceded from a set piece, which is very unlike us.
And it's very unlike them. Score from set pieces as well, which is, now I know they didn't score it. It was a Jacob Ryan own goal, but I thought that
good
was
ball
fine.
In.
I don't think the benefit, you know, for the players is maybe in that game. I think it's maybe the time they spent together in the camp beforehand and
traveling over, all that sort of stuff.
Hopefully, and hopefully, like, something like that might inspire something in them for the Nations League campaign, and then hopefully then to get to the Euros in 2 years' time, because I hope those players are thinking, oh, I'd love to be in a position, those Canadian players, being playing in a major tournament in home soil.
Absolutely.
A couple of players we've seen. Nicely missed. Amelia scored that goal. But,
a bad miss, but these things happen.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that these caps were maybe handed out a little bit too easily?
Yeah, Keith Tracy is making that point on Sunday, actually, it was, on Off the Wall, obviously, about the fact that he would just be... He was more just flagging, I suppose, something that he had experienced in his own career, really, where he was maybe not given stuff too soon or stuff handed to him on a plate, but kind of had achieved some things at a young age and thought, okay,
I made it.
I'm the man now. I can do, like, you know, it's sweet. Everything will work out for me. And obviously Keith's career went and went the way it did. As far as the caps being handed out too early, I think it's a double-edged sword, really, in that it's great to see an influx of new players playing for Ireland, and players that, for guys like us who kind of live and breathe Irish football, and you see these players and you talk about them a lot, but they're never people who you think are, not they're never people, but they're not of an ilk where you think the majority of them will end up getting caps. And there are players there. There, of course, are players there who will never get another cap again, and that is only natural, unless it's in a camp like this. If we do have one going forward, I don't think it's a bad thing, but I wouldn't have any issue with it being flagged as a kind of a warning thing to be like, look, a lot of these guys won't be in squads again. But I think the main thing about it is it's good for a lot of these players, particularly of a nature who are in the middle, you know, like your guys who are like your Corey and Dabas, like these type of players who are have kind of paved a path of their own, and Dabba didn't really play underage, had one cap, I think, under Stephen Kenny, or was called into one camp at a young level. Guys like him who at least for them to be recognised for what they're doing and know that they're doing something right, and it can give these guys a bit of a G up and a sense of purpose that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise. Because if he's not being recognised as someone who's playing in an elite league and is doing well, I'm using him as an example, there's other ones in the team, of course. It's also good from a League of Ireland level as well. I'm not sure, like, you know, there's accusations that he's ticking boxes here, he's just keeping people happy, people pleasing, trophy win, and you know, that might keep them quiet for a little bit. You know, that seems to be a bit of the rhetoric, but look, I wouldn't buy into that at all. I think if there's a pathway there for players to be involved in the Ireland setup, it's a great thing for League of Ireland too, because the likes of Keane Levy is going to go for a few more quid now if he does want to leave St. Pat's, which of course is a good thing. You know, an international cap adds a few quid to your bonus and or to your transfer. So I don't think it's a bad thing, but I would heed a bit of warning, of course. I think Keith was very valid in what he was saying. If you haven't listened to it, go check it out.
I think just on that recognition thing is a really good point, and I think you mentioned this maybe a few weeks ago as well, Ben. You're dangling a carrot in front of those players. So you're thinking 2 years' time, hopefully Ireland have qualified for a major tournament. And if you're a player like, I don't know, Joe Hodge, let's say, and you have a couple of decent maybe seasons, you might be still abroad. Like you're playing way off Broadway as regards the casual Irish football fan. But if you're thinking, I want to be one of those centre midfield spots, which they're all opening up for grabs, you don't know what the likes of Conor Coventry or Will Smallbone or whoever else is going to do. So you're dangling that carrot in front of them. You're also involving them in like what the process of it is like when you're training with the rest of the players, when you're in camp with the rest of the players. I guess the logistics sides of it as well. You're just learning like what it's like. Okay, they've played underage internationals, but this is different at senior level. And then like you said as well about Keane Levy, and that's a good example as well. Like I have, St. Pat's is kind of, would be my local team living up here now, and I've seen a lot of them, and you'd like, sometimes you're thinking, God, he's unbelievable, like X-factor player, you know. And when he came on in the game, I was like, oh, I don't know, is he going to be able to do the things that he can do in Inchicore on a Friday night? Can he do that in Montreal? And he actually could. And
the pace certainly translated.
Yeah, 100%. which is interesting. And I think that's a really good sign. And it shows that they weren't, these players, Adam Brennan, Keane Levy, Dawson Devoy, anyone else
Joe Hodge, like, Jade Newman, and Miss Amelia.
Like, they show that they are of a level, and they can, you know, maybe they can't do it every single game, every week in, week out for Ireland just yet, but they are of a level that can actually contribute and be a really important member of the squad.
But that's the thing as well, in that we've had a lot of camps where we've had a lot of injuries, and sometimes we've been drafting guys in that Hamer hasn't had a chance to have a proper look at as far as up close and personal in training, and these guys are coming in cold, and you know they're not going to be thrown in at the deep end to try and contribute to any great degree. Whereas now, Hamer has had, albeit not the greatest look of all time at these players, not for the longest period, but they are now people that maybe not he can call upon and trust, but call upon and think, okay, at least I know to some degree what I'm going to be getting here. And that could be valuable as far as, you know, the qualification campaigns go. One thing I would flag as well, probably worth getting into at some other point, not now, maybe at a time where maybe there's less going on in the world of Irish football. But look, maybe it's just having an off day. I thought Liam Miller had a very comfortable afternoon against Seamus Coleman, and it's not to call him out in any way, shape or form. Absolutely love Seamus Coleman. But our long-term solution at right-back is something I'd be keen to dig into. Because regardless, if he had played unbelievable at the weekend, it would still be something that would be worth talking about.
Yeah, just, I know we want to wrap up and move on here, but really interestingly in that piece, in the post-match interview Hamer Grimston done with Tony O'Donoghue, was that he mentioned that we maybe used like 48, 50 players throughout the two camps they had a look at. And then you had like 22, 23 other players that weren't involved at all, like that are, like, let's say, Finn Azaz, Ryan Manning, who are in playoffs and injured and, you know, all sorts. So the size of the squad and the, let's say, not to go all rugby on it, but like, you know, the depth chart.
Oh.
The depth chart.
Grim.
Is a lot bigger. I know it's a terrible thing, but it's a lot bigger than what it was, you know.
Cold air running through the room.
But you know, you've got instead of maybe having maybe four goalkeepers, we have maybe six goalkeepers that can do a job. We can instead of having, let's say, 12 defenders, then we have like 16 defenders that could, they're all of a similar ability, and we can call them in. And you know, eventually we will need some of those players, injury, suspensions, retirements.
You might only need two of them over the course of the next 5 years.
But at least you've had a look at them.
That matters.
Yeah.
Producer Brona is looking at you with great respect that you've used the rugby term on a football podcast. I always thought Keane Levy,
it's a 1 week suspension,
looked like do they give them in rugby? I always thought Keane Levy looked like a Phil Foden when I saw him play in the League of Ireland. We used to sometimes call him like, he's Phil Foden without the end product, but he's gained the end product over the last kind of 6 months or so. He has found that end product, and I think a lot of testament has to go to Stephen Kenny for the work that he does off the field with that. Just before we kind of finish up on this, I want to say that a lot of credit, I think, has to go to the Republic of Ireland men's national team staff as a whole for these kind of camps, because the likes of Joe Hodge, Aymer told me he hadn't seen him before this camp, hadn't seen him at all, and it had come off recommendations of other people and staff, and he watched a couple of clips of him. The likes of Jay Newman would have worked with underage staff members, and there's a couple more that would have worked with the likes of Jim Crawford, who was called up for this camp. Players that
met Jim Crawford in the airport, actually, in Alicante coming back. He was with Jason Malumbi. A few of them were on the flight, but Jim Crawford was notably there with them.
So like this is a staff collective coming together and going, look, you don't have the time to watch these players, we've watched them, get them in for this camp, and then you can watch them up close, see what they can do. And the likes of Jack Moylan, who hadn't been involved in any camp before, I know he got sent off 40 against Qatar, but he has firmly grabbed that chance and now he's in a real chance to be in, you know, should be in the squads really for the games in Nations League in autumn.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of players disappointed that they won't be in the Nations League squad, and that's, you know, a bad thing for them, but in a competitiveness standpoint, a good thing for the team. And just as well, and you know, you mentioned Jim Crawford, the 21s had some friendlies there recently. They drew 2-2 on Saturday with Croatia. They drew 0-0, I think, with the Qatar 23s the other day. The boy, was it Killian Murphy?
Cork City.
Cork City, the youngest under 21 player since Evan Ferguson. So there's a couple of good players. I have to say, Bemi Arubi, who's been unbelievable for Dundalk this year, also made his debut for the 21s. So there's some exciting players in that as well. And I guess some of those players moving for the 21s, the seniors, open up a few gaps for other players as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be positive about and excited about, and you're allowed to be like that at this stage. You know, we have the World Cup, obviously, that we're not part of, that we're all devastated not to be part of. We'd be in Mexico right now, you know. But that's just the way it is. But you know, I think there's still a lot of green shoots for the next couple of years.
Would you like to see Bemi Arubi play, because he spoke just a couple of weeks before about, you know, by playing international football in Nigeria. Obviously, Onoseni's gone to play for Nigeria, and he said, you know, if Nigeria called, Super Eagles called, he would have to seriously think about it, about going up. So I was delighted to see him get international recognition again for Ireland. Just before, right before we wrap up, I know we're not going to Mexico. There are a couple of people involved in Mexico and the United States and Canada. If you want to hear about them, the Avant-Garde Guide to the World Cup is on air tonight on Off the Ball from 9 o'clock, and you will hear all about the Irish players and many, many more. We couldn't use the word hipster. The word hipster is not really hipster anymore, isn't it?
No, it's kind of
mainstream.
I would know what you meant by the word hipster, but yeah, I understand.
I think hipster isn't hipster anymore. Hipster is now mainstream.
Yeah,
like the actual word hipster. So the Avant-Garde Guide to the World Cup.
Avant-Garde. See me, you know, right, not being as intellectual as the rest of you, I wouldn't have a clue what that means. I saw Avant-Garde come up, I'd be like, what the hell is that? And then I'd see Guide to the World Cup. I would see Guide to the World Cup and I click on it.
What's the Irish stories that we're looking at?
We won't really talk with Pico, because we know all about Pico, and we will have some stuff coming up on Off the Ball.
There's more, is there?
Pico. There are more.
Class.
Joseph Anang is obviously he's there. There's another person at Ghana, very involved with the League of Ireland. Don't spoil it.
It's not Chris Hughton.
Listen to the Avant-Garde Guards of the World Cup, and there's a couple other nations with Irish people involved as well. So the Avant-Garde
any big nations, like Brazil's, Argentina's,
Paul Clement.
Maybe not. You'll have to listen to them. They are competing in this 48 team World Cup. And you'll have to listen to that later.
Are we excited for the tournament? Who are we supporting? As in, like, well, obviously we can't support Ireland, but who are we supporting outside of that?
I can
if you don't want to,
like, the game of football. No, I'm joking. And do you know what, you could actually say that about this tournament and it'd be genuine. You want football to win outside of anything else.
Johnny Infantino over here.
Yeah, that's what
today
I mean
today. I feel
American. Yeah, American.
That's literally about that
tomorrow. I feel Paraguay.
No. Yeah. I actually said this the other morning, I always end up rooting for the Netherlands at these tournaments. I don't know why, I just like them. I like
the colour.
Yeah, love the colour, mate. My favourite colour, orange. But no, I always end up kind of getting behind them to some degree. I know this is a bit of a hot take. You might totally disagree with this, but I thoroughly enjoyed my time in the Czech Republic, so I wouldn't mind seeing them kind of...
I controversially got them in the works sweepstakes.
Yeah, I got Bosnia. I'm going to be in Croatia for the start of the World Cup, so I wish the under-21 game was next weekend. I would have gone. But I'm not going to be there for when they take on England. I have a hunch. I said this earlier on. I have a hunch. I think Portugal might come together for them for the first time in quite some time.
Tell you who I got in sweepstakes, the true dark horse of this World Cup, and I'm banging the drum about them for weeks.
Colombia.
Ecuador.
Yeah.
William Pacho. Seriously strong defence. 5 goals conceded, only 14 scored.
Do you know what? I said this to Mick earlier on. I think it's the rhetoric is so strong, and it's true. All that defensive stuff is true. They don't score, they don't concede. Absolutely nailed on for one of their games to finish like 3-3. Nailed on. Like, that's my, I had like 3 random like thoughts about the World Cup, like, I don't know, like totally unrelated and not specific. I think I can see England going out to Mexico in a game. I can see that happening in the Azteca. I can see them just getting rumbled and going out in that game, just getting ran off the pitch. The other one I had was that one I just mentioned about Ecuador having a really high scoring game, and the other one has just slipped my mind. I had 3.
Matthew, have it back for you next week. The avant-garde got through our cup, will be out tonight. Wherever you get it, David.
I'm going to just say I'm going to be supporting all the Latin American teams, obviously.
It's Argentina
and Scotland.
You do an Irish football podcast wearing an Argentina jersey.
Did you go to Latin America or something?
Once upon a time, yeah.
Yeah. Another week. Thanks very much for listening to The Green Scene. We will be back again for you next week for all things Irish football. Slán liomh.